Well, this morning we are going to conclude this week and next week this conversation we've been having on the Beatitudes. And basically, in this conversation, Jesus is proposing an alternate paradigm to happiness, right? We've seen historically, globally, culturally, how happiness has played out. And Jesus says, you know what? Maybe if we live in a different way, if we have communities that live in a different way, then maybe we'll be blessed. And so last week, Wei talked about blessed are those who are pure in heart, for they shall see God. The week before, Sam talked about blessed are those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. And so this morning, the topic that we're talking about, I think, is so incredibly relevant for our world, for our generation. I genuinely believe, guys, if we take what Jesus proposed this morning seriously and we live it in our families, in our lives, that we see incremental change that can literally change a neighborhood and a society. And we're going to talk about making peace. So to get us started, maybe think of a recent conflict that you've had or are in the middle of. Everybody got one? Not this past spring, the spring before. I got into a little conflict altercation on the road. So it went like this. It was not this past spring, the spring before. It was one of those beautiful, euphoric spring Austin days. You know what I mean? It's like 75. The birds are chirping. I had a lunch meeting at Home Slice. So I was riding back with like margarita pizza in my belly. It was just like a good euphoric day. So I'm riding down, you know, it's everybody's happy. You know, I'm enjoying the sun. I'm ringing the bell on my bike. I don't even know why. I'm just happy. I'm just, you know. And then I'm on Congress. There's three lanes going each way. There's no cars at all. I'm like having this euphoric moment. And then I hear a car coming from behind me, like faster than it sounds normal. Okay? Well, kind of strange, but back to my euphoria. And then as the car approaches faster and faster, it sounds, you know, it just sounds aggressive. And as I turn around, this car comes right at me, buzzes right in front of me to the point where I have to brake. And then I hear this woman's voice go, "Get off the road!" And then drive off, okay? So at this point, I go from euphoric, like margarita pizza loving, happy, and then something just like I don't know, like unconsciously just snaps. So I see this car. I feel like my life's been endangered. I'm now on the hunt. She's two lights down. She makes a right on Fifth. I'm chasing her down, right? I don't even know why I'm chasing. There's no game plan. I'm just chasing her. We're on Fifth Street now. I see her stuck at a light on Red River, and I'm thinking in my mind, I got her, right? I'm going to tell her the rules of the road. Say, I don't know what I'm going to do. As I approach the car, there's all this adrenaline in my body, and I pull up. I kid you not. There's like the cutest little old woman behind the wheel. Like she's so tiny, like her eyes could barely see in front of the steering wheel. And you could tell she's kind of scared because this crazy Asian man has been chasing her for the last five blocks. And I was disarmed by her cuteness. Like all this adrenaline, oh, cute old lady, right? And then I just kind of wave and then like awkwardly pedal off. And I remember thinking in my mind, I was like, what's wrong with me? Like what was I hoping to accomplish? What was I hoping to accomplish? Like, what was I going to do, right? But that instinct, when we feel like something's been taken from us, or there's been injustice, and we've been wronged, and you play that instinct out in marriages, in relationships, you play that out in families, you play that out in, you know, speaking of families, right? There's always this sense that it's always great in theory to be with your family over Thanksgiving, in theory, until you're sitting at the table, turkey's been shared, a few drinks have been had, opinions are shared, right? And then, right, conflict arises, and you play that out, and it's the world that we live in. And what does that mean then for us when Paul writes things like this? He says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. For the kingdom of God is not a matter of eating, drinking, but of righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Spirit. Let us therefore make every effort to do what leads to peace and mutual edification. And so what would that look like if we started in our lives, in our families, and became what Jesus is asking us to do? So it's just one quick verse. So I'll read it for us in one translation and then another. So in the New International, it says this: blessed are the peacemakers. I like that because it's not passive. You're actually creating something. For they will be called children of God. Eugene Peterson says it like this: you're blessed when you can show people how to cooperate instead of compete or fight. That's when you discover who you really are in your place in God's family. So this morning, I just wanted to talk about that. And I feel like it's relevant at so many levels, right? We're all in the middle of some sort of conflict. We have marriages and relationships that we can't resolve. We're stuck at a place where we don't know where to go. There's parental issues, grandparents, things that when you get together, there's a sense of awkwardness. You don't know how to make peace. We all maybe have that neighbor, and I have that neighbor, who keeps repeatedly doing things that we've tried to talk about it, but now we feel like we're being walked on. So now we feel like we need to act. How do we respond to that? We all are in workplaces where someone is out for their own good rather than the team, or they're taking things that you maybe should get credit for. And then how do we respond? How do we make peace? So just to get us started, I want to pull back a little bit and just ask, why is this idea of making peace even important? And I want to propose that the two solutions that the world generally offers are completely insufficient. Okay? Usually the first answer is to fight, right? If something's been taken from you, take it back. If they take back twice that. And then this ball of just revenge starts. There's this narrative in the Old Testament. There's this guy named Samson. Okay, so Samson was strong, you might say stacked. He had long flowing hair. So picture Fabio, that's what I'm picturing, just lounging with women, eating grapes, killing people, beheading them, right? So one day in this story, he wants to go now be with his wife, okay? So like a good husband, comes home with a gift. So we might generally bring chocolates or flowers or something special. He brings a goat, right? So he's got, this is going to be awesome, right? So he brings this goat. He comes to his wife's house. And then his father-in-law goes, oh, hey, so you got a goat, right? What's going on? He's like, I'm going to go be with my wife in her room. And he's like, oh, hey, so about that, maybe a little misunderstanding. I thought you totally hated her. And then, so I told her that. And then I told her to hook up with your best friend. So, funny story. While you've been gone, she's been hooking up with your best friend. So, ha, 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 ha. But it's okay. It's okay. This is what I said. But it's okay because she has the sister and she's kind of hot also. So it's going to work out. And so Samson, in response, goes, I will not only kill you, I will kill all of your people. The Philistines. So he now goes on this rampage that he really gets a 10 for like creativity and crazy. So this is what he does. He hunts down 300 foxes, which I'm guessing even if you're strong, takes time, right? So he hunts them down. He doesn't kill them. He now, there's like the amount of creativity that I feel like he should get points for. He ties all 300 foxes in pairs, okay? Puts a torch between each of these foxes. They're now tied together, okay? So that in itself takes work, okay? So this is like premeditated. He now drags 150 pairs of foxes with their tails tied together with a torch in the middle, drags them to the fields of the Philistines, and then lights them on fire. Which, imagine how spectacular that scene is, right? Fox is going, I'm on fire, I'm on fire. Other fox, I'm also on fire, I'm also on fire. We're tied together. And just 100, and it's sold out, their crops are now burning. The Philistines now go, what's going on? who did this, right? This is crazy. And they go, it was Samson, but it wasn't really Samson's fault because it was his father-in-law who told his wife to hook up with his best friend. So let's kill the father-in-law. So they now go hunt down his wife and the father-in-law, burn them at the stake. This is Samson's response. Since you've acted like this, I swear I won't stop until I get my revenge on you. Now the Philistines declare a national war on their entire people. It has now escalated between a marriage to a family to a neighborhood to a nation. And I want to propose, if you play that out for generations and generations, that's the world that we live in. There's this theologian by the name of Walter Wink, and he writes a lot. He calls it the myth of redemptive violence. Usually, we justify certain act of violence because we say whatever good it accomplishes at the end justifies the means. This is what he writes. The belief that violence saves is so successful because it doesn't seem to be mythic in the least. Violence simply appears to be the nature of things. It's what works. It seems inevitable. The last and often the first resort to conflict. And he keeps writing. The myth of redemptive violence is the simplest, laziest, least exciting, uncomplicated, irrational, primitive depiction of evil that the world has ever known. So I want to propose that peacemaking is so important because it's a myth that violence will somehow solve our problems, and it's the world we live in, okay? But then usually people say, well, I use that as my choice because the alternative is also not viable, okay? Let's just be passive, right? Let's just be weak, and let's get walked on. And usually people get walked on enough, they get taken advantage of enough, then they'll resort to violence. Do you remember the story when Jesus is in the garden, right? And so he's just broken bread. They've had wine. Now, his disciples they kind of have food coma, so they're falling asleep. Jesus is trying to pray. They keep falling asleep. And then they have this movement that they think that finally Israel that's been occupied is going to be free. And then they think this might be the Messiah. This might be the guy who will save us through power. And then they see the flicker of lights, and then Jesus is arrested. So Peter thinks, we've got a movement here, time to fight. Swords are out, right? He comes, he takes down an ear, there's blood on his hands, there's blood on his face, and Jesus is like, Peter, put away your sword, put away your sword. That's not how this is going to go. Then the disciples think, well, what's our option then? So they run. And we find them in those days cowering, hidden in a room. And I want to propose that maybe Peter denies Jesus because he realizes the only thing he had was to fight. It's been taken away from him. He doesn't know what to do. And I think often we resort to violence because we see this world being passive, being weak, does nothing. I was with a good friend of mine on Thursday, and I had just run into him, and he was on this rant. So he's a bicycle messenger in town, and he works at a bike shop. So cycling is his life. So he was on this rant. There's this Canadian legislator who was railing against bike lanes in Toronto. And in his statement to Parliament, he said basically that people who choose to cycle they're just swimming among sharks, right? And then he ends his statement by saying, if they get killed on the road, it's their fault. They're asking for it, okay? So my friend is up in arms, right? He's like, he's gone this rant. He's like, we're just asking for a white stripe. It's like paint. It's not even a physical barrier. How are we hurting? You know, what's going on? So he's on this rant. Then he goes, you know what bothers me even more than that? He says, cyclists now will read this and they'll do nothing. They'll just lay down. They'll like rant about it. They're like, what a jerk. And then they'll ride their bicycles to their coffee shop and sip their Americanos. And they might get angry enough to like Facebook it. Right? And so his rant was, this will never change anything, okay? He's speaking against being passive. And then he takes up the New York Times, which on that same day, I don't know if you guys heard in the news, the Brits hiked tuition rates to 14,000, right? Ooh, 14,000. And they're rioting, right? I have pictures of it. They're like breaking glass. They're fighting. So he's like holding this New York Times and he says, this is what cyclists should do. This is what changes the world. And I would propose this morning that peacemaking is so important because neither options are sufficient. These are the options that have been given to us, and this is the world that we live in. The 20th century is the bloodiest century in human history. 190 million people have died in wars. In the last 90 years, more people have died through war than the last 500 years. Okay, let me read that again. In the last 90 years, the amount of casualties is three times greater than the previous 500. 2,500 people die every day. 100 people every hour for the last 90 years. 90% of those are civilians. Three quarters of those are women and children. And those are the two options. And we say, we don't know how to exist in this world. And then Jesus comes with now this provocative statement, and I love it. He says what? Blessed are the peacemakers, right? Just like you make art, just like you make clothing, just like you make things with leather, just like you make sculptures, be artisans of peace. Create something, okay? And then so at this point, right, I'm thinking, that sounds great, but practically, what does that look like? Okay, it's a nice idea. Let's make peace. But that's so hard. Day to day, it's so complicated. How do we do it? Later in the text, he gives three examples. He says this, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye, right? Tooth for a tooth. Those were laws implemented so that the stories of Samson don't happen. If someone takes your wife, just take their one wife. Just no, stop at one wife. Right? Someone burns your crop, just burn them once, right? So there's civility there. And he says, you've heard it said like that. And then he says this, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, what do? Turn to them the other cheek. So the context of this is very important. So Jesus is speaking in an occupied country, okay? So their country has been taken over by Roman soldiers. So in the marketplace, you would see soldiers everywhere. Historians say that as he was teaching, the likelihood of Roman soldiers being there were very high because there was a large gathering of people from Israel. So they're there to mediate the crowds. What you would see often in the marketplace would be soldiers abusing these people, okay? They would often then, what are the words used? Slap, okay? Your right cheek. So in a lot of cultures still today, your right hand is the hand of power, right? It's what you do things with, what you write with. Left hand is toilet paper, okay? You don't use your left hand. In ancient Eastern cultures, it's the same thing. So what he's saying then, if I slap you with my right hand, okay, which goes like this, you slap with the backhand, you hit with the forehand, okay? If I slap you, which cheek am I hitting? Your right cheek, if you're looking at me, your right cheek, right? Now, when you slap someone, you only do that to someone who is below you. You're trying to dominate them with your superiority. What Jesus is saying, if someone slaps your right cheek, turn the left one. What are their options then? They can't slap you with toilet paper. It just isn't done. Their other option then is to slap you with the right hand, but it's just very awkward, and you just can't get a lot of force behind it because it would look like this, right? And your other option then is to actually hit them, which historians say, you're saying, fine, hit me again, but hit me as an equal. And Jesus, for every one of these responses, he's saying, don't respond with violence, don't respond with weakness. Respond with grace and generosity, and your grace and generosity will expose injustice. He gives another example. He says this, if anyone wants to sue you, take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. This is what was happening. So in Roman occupation, they were now doubly taxed. So you have your own Jewish tax, and then the Roman government comes in, and your tax is doubled. Okay? So picture that. If that happened to any of us, I think we would have financial problems. So what was happening is people couldn't pay taxes. You run out of money, you end up giving your land. This was land inherited down for centuries and centuries. Now, it came to a point where a lot of the people in the community had nothing left, no land. The only thing they had was their shirt and their coat. Legally, if you owed someone money, you could give them your shirt to say, I owe you, and this is my, I'm showing that I will one day pay you back. And so Jesus says, if someone, you've got nothing. They've already exploited everything you have. They're asking now for your shirt. Take off your shirt, give them your jacket as well. And back then, you only had two garments, so you're standing there naked. And as you're holding this, as you're giving above and beyond, you're exposing their greed, their injustice. And Jesus says, be peacemakers. Don't respond with violence. Don't respond with weakness. Respond with grace and generosity. Then the last example he gives, he says, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them too. It's the same deal. Roman soldiers were legally allowed to have you carry their equipment for 1 mile. Okay? So they wanted, you know, some sort of labor force laws, so it was the maximum of 1 mile. So he says, if they do this, and they would often do this, if they give you your pack, a Roman soldier does, after you walk the mile, go another mile. And as you're doing that, now the burden of responsibility is on them because they're violating the rules and the laws. And what Jesus is saying is it seems logical to respond to violence with violence, or we just run and we hide. And he said, maybe there's this way of grace. And when we go above and beyond, we stop that cycle of revenge, of violence. Maybe it's like this. So I have two sons, as many of you know. One is 11, the other one is 5. The 11-year-old is 100 pounds. The 6-year-old is 50. Okay? So being boys, sometimes they get into altercations, and this is often how it happens. So Noah will get frustrated. Okay, he's the younger one. And then he'll, you know, playing a video game or he's doing something, just get really frustrated. Joshua, the older one, thinks that Noah in frustration is very cute. Okay? So often he will respond to this frustration by provoking him to try to get him to be more frustrated. Okay? So you take those two things and then you play that out for, I don't know, 10 minutes. And then it comes to blows. Noah, because he has nothing left, right? He doesn't know what to do. He's frustrated. So he'll come at Joshua with like as hard as he can swing. Bam, okay? Joshua never fights back, mainly because he can't feel it, right? And he thinks it's even cuter. Like, this is a little man. He's punching me, and it's cute. So what he does, one time I saw them do this, and then Joshua just hugged him, which is, I think, what Jesus is saying. Except the one thing that Joshua did not do correctly, while Joshua was hugging him, he was like, there was maniacal laughter. There was like, ah, ha, 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 right? Don't do that. And I think what Jesus is proposing, that both methods of being passive and fighting back with violence are both postures of weakness, and that if there's a security and a strength, then we come back with generosity and grace. And so what does that look like in our workplace for that one coworker? And there's always that one person, right, who just seems to get away with it again and again. And then they don't know it, so you're like, this person needs to feel what they're doing to everybody else. So there's this group plan. And what does it look like to be generous and gracious? You know, with that neighbor. This is some of the neighborhood issues I'm dealing with. I have one neighbor, great guy, God bless his heart, likes to have solo parties on his driveway blasting music at 4 a.m. Which the first couple times, it's cool, right? You know, he looks like he's having a good time. We'll let it go. And then, you know, but if you've got a busy next day and it's 4, and then I don't even know, I'm like bouncing in my sleeve. I'm like, oh, there's music, right? And what does generosity and grace look like? I have another neighbor who's got a beautiful, large, mastiff bulldog mix giant, but also creates giant excrement right on my front lawn. And you step in that enough times, you want them to feel this. You want them to smell this, right? What does generosity and grace look like? We have people who we love, and people who we love usually can hurt us deeper than anyone else out there. And they've caused such pain, and we don't know how to deal with it, so we want to let them feel the pain. What does generosity and grace look like? And so at this point, you know, maybe some of us were like, you know, Gideon, you're right. I get walked on my whole life, and I don't think that's a viable response. I always say the next time I'm going to stand up, and next time comes, and I never do, right? Or maybe there's others of us, we fight. We fight back, and we look back. We've left a trail of broken relationships and misunderstanding, and you're like, I don't want to do that. But the reality is, I don't feel strong. And in my insecurity, I want to fight. Where do we go with that? And I think maybe the latter half of this is genius. Because Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And the word there is like an official designation, that you will be official with the inheritance, with the name, with the title of God. And maybe what he's saying here is that maybe our belonging to God and our reality of that allows us to make peace. Maybe it's like this. So I'm from Canada, and when I was younger, I grew up in Calgary, which is the Rocky Mountains. So I don't know if you've been, but it's beautiful, picturesque. And so I think it was our first anniversary. I said, we should go to Banff, right? Which is where I grew up. These are the mountains. I skied down. And so we went because our anniversary's in July, so no skiing available. But it's still gorgeous. So there's this one lake called Lake Louise. I don't know if you've ever been. But you can ride these lifts, these ski lifts, but it's in the summer. And you ride to the top, and you just see miles and miles of the Rocky Mountains. And then you see between these mountains this beautiful lake, Lake Louise. It's gorgeous, picturesque. And so we're having this really sweet moment. It's our anniversary, right? We're in Canada. You know, we're feeling the romance. It's beautiful. And then we come at the bottom of the ski lift. We're getting off. And I look to my right, and it was no further than maybe like where the cafe bar is. And I was like, oh, look. Looks like a cute little animal over there. And I was like, oh, my gosh, right? This is perfect. It's our anniversary. And look, there's a cute little baby bear over there. Right? So I grab my wife. I'm like, happy anniversary, cute little baby bear, right? And so I'm from the city. I don't have much experience with nature. And my wife's from the country. And she goes, what? Baby bear? Right? And she just goes into like this alarm mode. She runs to the lift operator and then goes, there's a baby bear. The lift operator pulls up his radio and goes, baby bear, baby bear. And then he takes off. And then all the tourists are standing there like, what do we do? So we like half like scared, half casually, just jog our way back to like the ski lodge, right? And so as you all know, you should be terrified of baby bears, right? Why? Mama bear, right? It's not because that one was really cute. It was like almost as cute as that little old lady behind the wheel. It's like super, super cute, right? But it's who the baby bear belongs to. And maybe Jesus is saying that as people who follow Christ, as communities of faith, that in our belonging, we make peace. That in our belonging to the defender of orphans and widows, the defender of the afflicted, the children, the poor, that we belong. And so our job then is to make peace. And then Paul writes it like this. In Romans 12, I think I have it up there. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is all possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, dear friends, But leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, it is mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. Okay, at this point, I think Paul's doing great, and it's inspiring. And I don't know if his old terrorist ways that he had to like throw this last line in. And in doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. I'm not sure if that is necessary, but you get his point. And then he says this. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And so you've got the night Jesus was betrayed, right? And his friends are reacting. They don't know how to react. And you've got Peter who's drawing the sword. He's cutting off people's ears. And then you've got people running. They're hiding. They don't know how to respond. And as Jesus is arrested and tried, and as literally his shirt and his cloak is given up and he's hanging there naked, as they repeatedly strike him, he not only turns his other cheek, but he hangs on a cross. And as communities who celebrate that week in, week out, and as we live in that way, and Isaiah said it centuries before, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And so may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And may the Lord turn his face to you and give you peace. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.